Reverend Walter read our text for today in the second chapter of Exodus, in the 15th B part. It says, but Moses fled. He went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and to fill their troughs to water their father's flocks. And some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flocks. The 18th verse says, and when the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, why have you returned so early? And they answered, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock. The 20th verse said, where is he? Reuel asked his daughters, why'd you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat. I'll stop there. I'll give you the title of the sermon in a minute. One of the favorite experiences in ministry that I have is the ability to see someone identify a gift and talent and then develop that talent and use it at a high level for the kingdom. One person in particular that I'm talking about right now is Stanley Jackson Jr. Him and his family, God gave me the privilege of pastoring them. Well, to tell the truth, I still think I'm pastoring them. But they lived in the Evansville community two times. It's as if God brought them here and they served for quite a while, and then God sent them to Vegas. And it's as if God wasn't done and he brought them back for another season. In that particular season, their children grew up, went to college, and then afterwards, God sent them to Vegas again. But during that second time, Stanley started writing plays, and not only does he write plays, but Stanley, he writes music as well. And he's a kind of quiet guy until you get him in on a stage or in an area where he's comfortable. And we talked a lot as he was writing plays, and one of the things that we talked about was picking different people in the church and using them, trying to identify people that we thought or that he thought could fill certain roles. And it was so funny as we discovered there were people that you never would have thought the talent that they had and the ability that they had to do the things that they were able to do, to carry the story in the way that they did. And Stanley would always push them because he wanted to present it at a high level. I remember when we first started off, we had plays right here. And then there was another time we had a play at another church because they had a bigger stage. And then there were times we had a play at the Victory, and then we were in Henderson. And then, you know, he's just done some great things. But as they began to practice and as they were getting to crunch time in the last few weeks of the play, I would tell Stanley, I said, Stanley, I'm praying for you. And Stanley would say, don't pray for me. Pray for them, because they ain't going to like me this week, because this is crunch time. Stanley understood what he was after. He said, people are paying good money to come see this message, this Christian entertainment, and folk have got to be able to give it at a high level. And they're going to have to memorize their lines. They've got to have the timing down right. And people are going to have to know their cues. And I'm not going to stop until they get it right. He knew that sometimes people don't go to a higher level unless you push them. Sometimes it takes pressure to get people to operate at a high level. Here's what I want to preach about today. Destin, I want to talk about don't miss your cue. Moses, in Exodus 2, Moses is sitting in the shade. He's a short distance away from the well. I'm a country boy, and I know the setting of where he is from the standpoint. There's no ponds around there. There's no creeks around there. There's no lakes around there. There's no streams around there. So in agriculture, nothing survives, Langston, without water. And so because these people who owned sheep and goats didn't have water where they lived, they had to bring the sheep to where the water was. Every day, they would have to bring the sheep to where the water was. And I don't remember if I've ever had you at the farm where you have the privilege of being where there's 100 goats surrounding you. Well, we need to make that a part of your history. We'll do that soon so that you'll understand that when you have 150 goats or sheep around you, you don't necessarily, unless that's your business, want to be standing in the midst. So I know Moses, after getting his drink of water, was sitting in the distance in some shade, close enough to see the well, but far enough away to be away from the chaos of what happens when a whole lot of four-legged creatures who are thirsty, that are hustling, bustling, trying to get something to drink. He's sitting there minding his own business. I'm sure he's sitting there, he's reflecting. Matter of fact, I think he's recharging. He done got out of Egypt alive, and he's sitting there resting from this journey. He's recharging and he's reflecting. Junior, it's a new season. He's got a new spot. It's a new setting. He's in a place. He don't know nobody. And don't nobody know him. From what he's been through, he's in a new spot, new season. He don't know anybody, and nobody there knows him. And he's minding his own business. In the words of some of my friends who I disciple, he's staying out of the way. In the distance, he hears the bells that goes with any herd of sheep to recognize, so that the shepherd can recognize where the sheep are. And he sees the cloud of dust, and that's not unusual because they're headed to the well. As they get a little closer, he sees that they're not led by shepherds, Langston, they're led by shepherdesses. Come to find out, these are all young ladies that are taking care of these sheep. These ladies have come to handle their business. One well, one rope, one bucket, one trough. You let one bucket down in the well with one rope at a time. Pull it up, take the one bucket with the water, and pour it in one trough at a time. And you do it over and over and over again until all the sheep get as much as they want to drink. But they're not Moses' sheep, and it's seven sisters. They can spread the load. And so he sits in the shade, minding his own business, recharging, because he's in a new spot. It's a new season. Nobody knows him. He don't know nobody. And he's minding his business, staying out of the way. But about the time they're getting started watering their sheep, here comes another group from another direction. This herd is led by some big old men. And he's sitting there, and as he watched them come together, the men with their herd, they don't stop. It's a community well. The well don't belong to nobody. The well doesn't have anybody's name on it. It belongs to everybody in the community. It's a first come, first serve kind of well. It's clear that the young girls got there first. But these men don't stop and do social distancing, showing respect. They come right on in as if the young girls weren't even there. It makes Moses kind of raise up on his elbows, because it's clear they were there first, and they were already started watering the sheep. But these men who were bigger, evidently louder, and absolutely ruder, acted as if they didn't even exist. And Moses, something down on the inside starts stirring. Put a pin right there, I'll be right back. In the 4th century, there was a physician by the name of Hippocrates. Hippocrates in the 4th century, 5th century, he came up with this idea of 4 human personalities. He said most people can be, Iresi, you can usually fit them in about 1 of 4 personalities. One personality is this person he would call the sanguine. This person is highly talkative. This person talks a lot, very enthusiastic, a very socially minded person, a very chatty person, the sanguine. The second personality, the choleric person. This person is an extrovert. Ain't afraid of nobody. He's an extrovert. Independent, but very decisive, a very decisive individual. The third personality, he calls it the melancholic person. This person is analytical, very detail-oriented, deep thinker, introverted. And then this fourth person, he calls the phlegmatic. This phlegmatic person, this person's relaxed. This person's peaceful. This person's quiet. He's easygoing. But he's very sympathetic and cares deeply about others. He don't normally bother nobody, but he cares deeply about others. He's the kind of person, if you don't start nothing, If you don't start no stuff, it won't be no stuff. But if you start it, he showed the kind of person that will finish it. I want to ask you, if you've been listening, what kind of person do you think Moses is? And here's what I need to tell you. Someone suggested the person who is wired this way, they will grow and they will mature, but they will never change from that personality. That's the same personality that caused Moses to rise up. Moses didn't run around popping people off just to pop people off. He didn't pop a cap in that Egyptian until he saw the Egyptian put a knee to the neck. I'm sorry, until he saw the Egyptian about to kill the Israelite. He didn't run around beating up Israelites, but he got involved because he saw an Israelite beating up an Israelite. And he was minding his own business right here. But because of the way he was wired, in the words of Michael Corleone in Godfather 3, Michael Corleone said these words, "Every time I get out, y'all pull me." Y'all pull me back in. For those of y'all who don't know about Godfather 3, here's what he was really saying. I said to myself, I wasn't going to beat up nobody no more. I came all the way out to Midian because I made up my mind I was going to go a long way where I didn't know nobody, nobody knew me. I was going to find me a spot in the shade, and I was going to stay out of the way. But while he was doing all of that, the sovereign God we serve was sovereignly orchestrating his steps. And when Moses saw these girls being mistreated, he didn't miss his cue. I'm almost done. You see, he didn't miss his cue to stand for injustice. Let me show you what his stand looked like. First thing I better tell you, I told you he was trying to recharge, but sometimes God don't let you get a complete recharge before he puts you back into action. Okay, let me try it over here. Ed, I need to tell you, God don't always let you get a complete recharge before he puts you back into action. Okay, Dustin, I'm trying to help you. Sometimes when the Lord use you, he will about use you up, and he'll give you a chance. Won't he renew your strength? But he ain't gonna always let you get all your strength before he puts you back in the game again. Okay, I can do it like this. Y'all been wondering why I've been running around all summer with my windows down. It's because I ain't had time to get over to Charlie Hunter's, but I got a chance to get over to Charlie Hunter's just the other day and pulled in, and Charlie, he hooked my truck up and gave me some Freon. And Charlie said, "Now listen, Pastor, you know, I can get you one more year. You do know this truck is a 2002. You do know this truck got 240,000 miles on it. But I can get you with air conditioning. I can get you one more year. But next year, if you still got this truck, we gonna have to buy a new compressor, but I can get you one more year." And he said, "So I'm gonna charge it up, but watch this, Mario." He said, "But I'm not gonna give you a 100% charge." And then I was thinking to myself, well, since you got all that Freon, and since I'm willing to pay whatever it takes, why ain't you gonna give me, I'm thinking this to myself, why ain't you gonna charge me all the way? But I ain't say nothing, because the Holy Ghost have a way of shutting your mouth for yourself sometime. But then when I got inside, have I got a witness here? And when I was leaving, after he refused my money, when I was leaving, I had goosebumps that I never had before. And it dawned on me that I really didn't need a full charge just to experience something that I had never experienced before. I'm trying to help you. For what God calls us to do, we don't always have to have a full charge to accomplish what he's calling us to do. He don't always wait until you're fully rested. Sometimes he gives you just what you need so that you can accomplish what lies ahead. I don't know how many shepherds he had to beat up. Doesn't say. But I do know that his injustice looked like this. The text says, it says it in these words, the just, he stood up, he took a stand, and the word that was used to describe what he did, the text says, he rescued them. You figure it out for yourself, but he rescued them. I'm so thankful that he used the word rescue, because rescue can be a whole lot of different things in different situations. Have I got a witness here? If you broke down by the side of the road, rescue might mean a ride. Have I got a witness? If your lights might get about to get turned off, rescue might be help with a bill. If you're about to throw in the towel and jump off the bridge, rescue might be a friend in the time of trouble. I don't know what rescue looks like, but I'm so glad that he used the word rescue, because the Holy Ghost will define what rescue needs to be in that particular time. The girl said, Daddy, he rescued us. He didn't miss his cue, and his justice was rescued. Tell you what else he did. He provided a little affirmative action. And I know that's a nasty word. I know that's a nasty word, but it's a good word. It's still a good word. Because if you hold me back because of the color of my skin, then you at least ought to let me move forward because of the color my skin. I know. We've changed it. We call it, we look for those underrepresented, because we are masters of the English language. We are masters of the English language. We're real good at twisting the English language. But if you hold me down for one reason, you ought to at least allow me to catch up for that same reason. But here's what I love about it. Watch the text. It's in the text. The girls testified, Daddy, he rescued us. And the father knew how long it took normally to water that many sheep. And they back early, and they grinning, they smiling. The curl ain't broke down. Y'all catch this in the parking lot. And they fresh. They just, you know, from the walk. And he's looking at them as if they'd been to the mall. He said, what y'all doing back so early? Daddy, an Egyptian, they didn't know his name, rescued us. And watch this. She said, not only did he run them shepherds off, but he even watered our flocks for us. So what he did was he not only rescued them, but then he took on the work and watered the flocks. And he did it. It's not that they couldn't do it. They were very capable of doing it. But it could be, with all they were going through, it gave them a chance just to sit down. Y'all sit down. Collect yourself. Take a drink. and let me go on and get this work done while y'all calm yourself. And I just love the picture. He gave them some relief. That's really all I'm trying to say. He rescued them, and then he offered them some relief. And then I'll give you this final one. This final one, what you really see is, in a real sense, he gets rewarded for standing up for them, for rescuing them, and for relieving them. And God has a way of rewarding you. And it was all a part of God's plan. Because here's what happens. You know, the question that everybody got to deal with when they face the issue of dealing with justice issues, because there's nothing sexy about facing injustice. And people got to deal with the personal question, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? If I do this, what am I going to get out of it? And in some cases, it may be nothing. However, in some cases, it may be a blessing out of this world. I'll come back to that in a minute. In some cases, it may be nothing. But in some cases, it may be a blessing out of this world. Because every now and then, God has a way of using tragic sacrifices in the present to bring about great transformation in the future. I don't know. I wasn't there. I heard about a little boy named Emmett Till. I had to look him up on Google many years ago, and I was wondering why a mama would allow her little boy to be viewed and photographs to be taken, and why it be plastered all over the world. It was a tragedy. Why would a mother allow her child to be viewed like that? It was a tragedy back then, but somehow it brought about some transformation so that the tragedy then made some things better for generations in the future. Somehow, every now and then, there is a sacrifice of suffering that takes place in the past that allows something marvelous, a little better, to happen for those who are coming in days to come. You're going to catch this in a minute. And there's a whole lot of folk, some that you'll never know, that sometimes suffer in the present. And we cry and we wonder why. But every now and then, in the midst of that, God will use that to do a complete reset. I'll say this and I'm done. Moses gets a complete reset in his life. It not only blesses him, watch what happens. Because he came out from under that tree, because he stood up, because he rescued those daughters, because he offered them some relief, even the father said, why did you bring him home? You brought home a knucklehead, ain't never rescued you from nothing. You brought home T. Wayne, and he ain't never relieved you from nothing. You brought home Buki, and he created burdens and never relieved your burden. Now here's somebody who fought for you, stood for you, worked for you, and you left him out there. Where is he? Because, sister girl, you need to know the kind of man to bring home. I know what the problem was. He ain't been to the barber shop because he'd been on a long trip. I know what the problem was. He didn't smell good because he'd been on, but he did rescue you. He did work for you. And they had to go find him. And then the father said, now this is the kind of man worth bringing home. And when the story is ended, he ends up with a job, a home, and a wife. And before you know it, he got Junior. because God gave him a complete reset. He was in a new season, in a new place, trying to stay out of the way. But in God's divine timing, and in God's divine timing, he gave him some cues that allowed him to see how to connect with God's plan. And because he did not miss his cue, he was able to walk into everything that God had divinely arranged. And I'm telling you, he was still a cool dude. He was peaceful. And he spent 40 years taking care of his father-in-law's sheep, 40 years with his wife, Zipporah, 40 years. And then one day, because he was where he was, God set a bush on fire, and the rest is history. We can't always figure out why God does what he does when he does it. But I want to suggest to you that within your soul, God has wired you a certain way. Understand, embrace the personality that God has given to you. Make sure that you operate within the will and word of God, and trust that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and walk in a way that pleases and honors him. And God will give you cues so that you'll know where to turn, when to stop, when to go, when to stand, and you'll see him open doors that need to be opened, close doors that need to be closed. He'll bring people into your life. He'll take others away, and you'll have a testimony, and you'll say, I'll look back over my life, and you'll discover that he ordered your steps. It was not by accident. It wasn't by luck or circumstance. For the Bible is clear, the steps of a good man or woman, they are ordered by the Lord. And I'm going to take him, I'm going to take him at his word. Amen. 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 Somebody.